Hare Krishna. So this morning we're going to continue in our short series of describing my time with Srila Prabhupada. Yesterday morning we left off just as Srila Prabhupada was coming to New Vrindavan, and that would have been right in the beginning of September of 1972. And as I had described when I was in New Dwarka, Los Angeles, I received Brahmin initiation there. So that was in July. So then when I returned to New Vrindavan, Kirtanananda Maharaj, he immediately put me into the kitchen. Up until that time, I was in the fields, milking cows, doing different things. But now I had my Brahmin initiation. So he put me in the kitchen and started showing me how to cook. One of his favorite preparations was khichdi. And it had a very easy process. We would make, of course, for many devotees, big pot. And it was basically two parts rice, one part dal. And he said, whatever spice is on the shelf, you put some in. That was his spicing for khichdi. Whatever was there, put a little bit in. So I followed that instruction. So that was just 2 months before Prabhupada was to come to New Vrindavan for a big festival. That was where they would have a yearly Janmashtami festival. I think by now it was the third year in a row. So each year it grew more and more. And again, Maharaj, he saw that he was training me up to be Prabhupada's servant. But he was also very good at keeping a secret. So he never told anyone, including myself, that this was his plan, that I was going to become Prabhupada's servant. So the festival started and Prabhupada arrived, and it just so happened that when he left Los Angeles, his servant remained there and didn't come with him. He had left him. Nanda Kumar stayed back on the West Coast. So Prabhupada came to New Dwarka and he had his Sanskrit editor, which was Prajumna, and his secretary was Shyamasundar, but didn't have a servant. So he remained in New Vrindavan for about 1 week, and they had Bhagavat Sapta on Govardhan Hill. There was one hill in New Vrindavan. It was a few hundred yards from the main temple there, which was called Bahulaban. And Prabhupada would come there every morning and every evening. And they made a big pandal, a big tent there. So hundreds of devotees were there every day, came from all over the East Coast, as far away as Los Angeles, 3,000 miles away, because Prabhupada was there. And as I had said, I had become really fortunate in Los Angeles because I was getting so much association with Prabhupada. And I was looking forward to his arrival in New Vrindavan. But now I was in charge of the kitchen. And in those days, to be in charge of didn't mean you had 5, 10, 20 people under you. It meant you did everything. That was being in charge. It meant that I cooked all day long. So I used to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, chant my rounds, attend Mangal Artik, and then go into the kitchen. That was the program. And stay in there till around 9 to 10 o'clock at night. At that time, you would make the milk sweets for the next morning. New Vrindavan had cows, so we had very nice milk, real creamy milk from our Jersey cows that we had there. So we could make nice milk sweets. So all these things I was learning, I learned how to make sandesh and chapatis and rice and dal, because Kirtanananda, he was also a very good cook. Early on, he was known as Kitchenananda, you know, it was because he was in the kitchen, and Prabhupada personally taught him how to cook. So, as I said, there were many hundreds of devotees there, and then I had a few assistants, because we would cook for all the devotees, and as perhaps Maharaj Radhanath Maharaj told here, he was one of my assistants in the kitchen. along with Bir Krishna, who was at that time Bir Krishna Dasadakari, and Radhanath was Brahmachari. So they were all helping in the kitchen as we would make hundreds of chapatis for the devotees every day. But what happened was I went from having so much association with Prabhupada, being around him on the morning walks, being at his classes, being at his darshans in the afternoon, to nothing at all in New Vrindavan. Each day went by and I was chained to the kitchen. And in New Vrindavan, 1972, the kitchen was very austere. It was a farmhouse. It had no running water in it at all. There was a well outside the door, the main door, where you would get your water. And the stove was a wood-burning stove. So it was kind of like India, you know, if you would be in a village in India, it was similar to that. So many of us, we were all cooking all day long, and Prabhupada was giving his discourses. And neither was there a speaker systems or, you know, radio going from all around the community. If you weren't there, you didn't hear and you didn't see. So sometimes devotees would come into the kitchen and tell me how nice everything was, and did you hear Prabhupada's class today? And I would just say, no, I'm in the kitchen. So as the days went on, I was becoming a little more, I was feeling that separation from Prabhupada, and I was really missing it. And my godbrothers, they didn't help very much, because they would say how nice it was, and then I would become more upset that I wasn't there. But I had my duty to cook for all the devotees. So I did that every day. So it was the night before Prabhupada left and he was going to go to Pittsburgh the next morning. So that evening, and it was like 8:30 in the evening, and I'm in the kitchen and I'm just preparing prasadam, I'm preparing for the deities, making the milk sweets. And Kirtanananda Swami came into the room. He had always had his little cane with him, you know. And he came into the room and he just said, so, he said, do you want to be Prabhupada's servant? And I was completely just, well, I didn't know what I was. I was just amazed. I had no idea. It was the furthest thing from my mind that I would be offered this chance. So very quickly I said, yes, you know. And he said, okay. He said, you'll be leaving with him tomorrow morning. And that was it. And he said to me, he said, you are my link to Prabhupada. And he said, he already spoken with Prabhupada. All these arrangements were made. I didn't know what was going on. He said, I told Prabhupada that you will be his best servant that he's ever had. He said, because you'll never leave him. And I was just excited, you know. So I remember I packed this little suitcase of belongings that evening and didn't sleep much that night. And then early in the morning, he came and he got me, and we went to Madhuban Farm, which was nearby. And that was a very small farmhouse, smaller than the other one, Bahulaban, very simple. And I don't even remember seeing that place very much, but that's where Prabhupada would stay when he was in New Vrindavan at the time, this Madhuban farmhouse. And also there was no water in the house, and it was very simple. And Prabhupada had a small sitting room, and Kirtanananda Maharaji brought me in and we offered obeisances. Now I had seen Prabhupada in New Dwarka. Like I said, I was reading to him every day, Krishna book, and by this time he kind of recognized me. One day he called me Sutta Goswami because he saw me reading every day. And we went in that morning, and he just, as he did everywhere, I found he just had a small desk lamp on his desk, and he sat on a cushion, very simple, and he just had this one lamp. He didn't use early or late at night. He didn't use a lot of lights. As soon as everyone was gone, he just had this little desk lamp he would turn on. And he just had his desk lamp. And we went in and offered respects, and then I just sat there, you know, still in a lot of awe and reverence, and just kind of afraid. And I was just sitting there, and Kirtananda said, Prabhupada, he said, this is Srutakirti. He's going to be your servant. And Prabhupada just nodded and said, okay. And then he said, Srutakirti, he said, he's a very good cook. He said, but he doesn't know how to massage. And Prabhupada said, anyone can massage. You remember these stories from Sunday about how difficult it was actually to massage. Huh? So many, Prabhupada complained about wet hands, and some people he said massage like a woman. So, you know, but he said anyone can massage, and just passed it off. And then we're just sitting there, and then Prabhupada said, he stood up and he grabbed his lota on the floor next to the desk, and he just said in a very deep voice, at 5 o'clock in the morning, Prabhupada's voice was very, very deep, you know, 3, 4, 5 o'clock, so grave and deep. And he just said, come with me, to me. And he stood up and took his lota and walked out the door. And I just followed behind him. So he walked about 10 meters outside, and he just turned around and said, wait here. I stopped and I stood there. So then he went walking another 20 meters or so behind some trees into the woods with his lota. So then a few minutes later he came back and wasn't even looking at me and just handed me the lota and said, you wash this with dirt and water. He said, then you put it back by my desk. And he just walked away from me and went into his house. So I did as I was told, and then I went in and I placed it there. And then that was it for the morning. I didn't do anything else. He didn't say anything to me. He wasn't friendly. He was just very grave. And that was my first service now as his personal servant. Was cleaning his lota after he had passed. So immediately everything had changed, the whole mood. For me, it had changed so much in the consciousness, and I realized I was Prabhupada's menial servant. Whatever he wanted, I would do, and that's what it started with, was cleaning his lota. I described this lota was famous in ISKCON, and from the time I joined in 1971, we would always hear about Prabhupada's lota. You would hear different things, but the lota was one of the first things I heard about, and I didn't even know what it was. I didn't know what it looked like. We didn't know any of these things, you know. But we had heard he had gone to Russia and spent some days in Russia. And, of course, in Russia it was very difficult for a devotee to get. You couldn't get grains, you know, you couldn't get vegetables, you couldn't get fruits. You would wait in line, you know, to get some rice and flour. And you would wait in line for hours and hours to get some milk. And one of the devotees went and had to stand in line to get milk. And they had no containers. So this was the story. So they used Prabhupada's lota to get the milk in. And I didn't know what that meant. Like, you know, so they used the lota to get. But of course, the lota was used for the bathroom. So it was contaminated, right? But then it said, Prabhupada said, time, place, and circumstance. So when you have to, you do. Prabhupada, one of his sayings, he would say, do the needful. He would always say, do the needful. So that was one of the things I learned very early in Krishna consciousness, was that Prabhupada used his lota to put milk in, because you did what was necessary. A devotee does whatever is required to do his service. So they put milk in that lota. So now I got to see that lota and clean that lota. You know, it would be by Prabhupada's desk and he would use it to spit in sometimes. And but so that was my first service. So then from there, of course, everything was just kind of numb. And we left New Vrindavan that morning and drove a short distance, just 2 hours away. Prabhupada drove to Pittsburgh, and he spent one night there. And the next day he would fly to Dallas. So Pittsburgh was the first time now I was separated from my home in New Vrindavan, where I was brought up for 1 year 1 year and 3 months as a devotee. That was my home. So now I had left and went back to Pittsburgh. And they had nice, there was a nice large room for Prabhupada. He had a sitting room and a bedroom. And it's all I remember was there was this suitcase. It was Prabhupada's suitcase. And now remember, there was no servant already. So I was just his servant. That was it. I didn't know anything. Just like here in this temple, I see you have, everywhere you go, there's instructions, right? I was upstairs. They tell you where to hang your laundry, how to hang your laundry, who can hang the laundry, on what number, everything, right? You don't have to think here. You just do what you're told. You know, in the temple room, this place is here for these people. This is for those people. Prasad, and where to put the offered garlands. Instructions are there everywhere here in, at this temple. It's very nice. But I had become Prabhupada's servant, and no one said anything to me, just that I was Prabhupada's servant. And one instruction I received was, when he rings the bell, go in the room. That was it. And the first day I was with him, Sudama Maharaj was there, who had been Prabhupada's servant. Very sweet devotee, Sudama Maharaj. Nice kirtans and classes. And he had been Prabhupada's personal servant some time before, a few years before. So he gave Prabhupada massage on a regular basis. So he was giving Prabhupada massage in Pittsburgh that day. So he just said, you can watch me. I'll be here. You can watch me give massage. So that's what I did. Prabhupada was receiving massage, and I was watching as he poured sandalwood oil into the palm of his hand, and he was rubbing Prabhupada's head. And I, again, I didn't take any notes or anything. I was just watching and hoping to know what to do. And then he, after his head with sandalwood oil, then he used the mustard oil in the bottle and pour some in, teaspoon in, and rub it, and started rubbing Prabhupada's back. So I'm just watching and watching. And I'm thinking, well, I don't have to massage him right now, and he'll be here for a few days or something, and, you know, gradually I'll learn how to do it. Of course, after he gave Prabhupada massage that day, he offered his obeisances and said, I'm leaving Prabhupada. He was going to such and such temple, and so that was it. He was gone. So that was my one class in massage that day. And so I watched that happen, and then I just went back into Prabhupada's bedroom, because that's where I would stay, just sitting and waiting. My service had changed so much. New Vrindavan, you worked from morning till night. You were physically working. They had different expressions there in New Vrindavan. We would say we were living Bhagavad Gita, not reading Bhagavad Gita. So we Kirtanananda had all these ways of getting us to work very hard. So we didn't have to read it. We had reached the conclusion and we were working. Huh? We were living Bhagavad Gita. And another saying, expression he had was, work now, samadhi later. So we were always very busy from the time we got up to the time we went to bed. So now I was busy, but it was in a different way. A lot of my busyness was sitting and waiting for Prabhupada to say something, you know, to call me. So I was sitting there, and again, I was just looking through his things, figuring out what was Prabhupada's, you know, his dhoti, kurta, everything was in there, and this cooker was in his suitcase, Prabhupada's cooker. There's some nice pictures, if you've ever seen his brass cooker. And, you know, I just sat there. So it was afternoon time. Someone else had cooked because I didn't know anything what I was doing. And I heard the bell ring. Just a little ding, 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 ding. So I immediately knew, answer the bell. So I just ran into Prabhupada's room and I offered obeisances. And then I sat up and Prabhupada was behind the desk. It was always the same. Every room looked the same everywhere around the world. 50, 60 temples. It didn't matter where you went. Prabhupada sat on the floor on a cushion and had a little table in front of him. And the lamp was there. We did everything the same for him. And I sat up and looked at him and said, yes, Prabhupada. and he just had a big smile. And he said, I was just wanted to see how fast you were. So immediately we had changed from New Vrindavan. I was cleaning his lota. I was very grave, very serious, and I was filled with anxiety and didn't know what was happening. To now he rang the bell just to see how fast I was, he said. So then he had a big smile, so I also smiled, and I said, anything else? He said, no, that's all. He said, now you can go. So then I went back into the room. And then he had some guests came in that day, some Matajis, weren't temple devotees, but from outside. So then he called me into the room, and he said to me, you sit here. He said, whenever there are ladies, he said, if I'm in the room and there's just ladies, he said, you must be here, he said. He said, I'm a sannyasi. He said, you sit here. And then he would talk. So that day, and sometimes people were in and out, and I said to him, Prabhupada, I said, well, you're with other devotees. Is it okay if I'm sitting here? Yes, he said, you can sit. You can always sit, he said. So then we left Pittsburgh. We took a flight. This was my first flight with Prabhupada. And his secretary was Shyama Sundar. As I said, Shyama Sundar, he was very expert. I never had to think about anything except Prabhupada's personal service. We, of course, was preparing to go to India, so I filled out some forms to get a visa while we were in Pittsburgh, or passport. I never had a passport, so I had to fill out forms. And so all I had to do was sign a few things, because he arranged everything. He was so expert, you know. And I just took care of Prabhupada's personal service. And he said to me, he said, your job, Shyama Sundar said this to me, he said, your job is to be, whenever Prabhupada leaves his room, you're right there next to him. He said, that's your service. I said, okay. He said, when you're on the plane, he said, you sit next to Prabhupada. I said, okay. And then very quickly he said, I'm recording classes. When you were in New York and Los Angeles, it was all done, just like here, recording is going on. And it was like that in Los Angeles and New York. But in other temples, we would record Prabhupada's class. That was the job of his entourage. So he said, you know, can you do this? He showed me the tape recorder. I said, yes, I can do. He said, so you will record on the morning walks. He said, you stand next to Prabhupada. And when he's speaking, he said, you record the conversations. And I'm thinking, this is all really wonderful, because he keeps telling me I have to be right next to Prabhupada. You know, this was my job now. This is my service. So I like Shyama Sundar very much, because he was giving me all this opportunity to be right next to Prabhupada. So we flew to Dallas, and again, now this is my second day. And I'm just getting, you know, Shyama Sundar and Prajumna, they both came back in 1967. So I joined in 1971, which was 4 years later. So to me, that was an entire generation. Like, they were, just like you see Prabhupada's disciples, and then there's his godbrothers, you know, my godbrother's disciples. So to me, they were Prabhupada's elite core of devotees. I was just a little boy. I was 21. They were 26, 27 years old. They were like men, you know. They were older men and very senior. So I had a great respect for them, and I didn't like kind of associate with them a whole lot, because they were on a different level. But I was just getting to know Prajumna, Sanskrit scholar, Prabhupada's Sanskrit editor, and again, Shyama Sundar. So we went to Dallas. And in Dallas, Prabhupada, that was where at that time was the Gurukula, the headquarters for ISKCON Gurukula. And it was also a church, so it had a lot of facilities. Had the big temple room, lots of quarters for brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, even rooms for householders. Everyone lived in the temple. And everyone lived as brahmachari. There was no difference. It was the same. If you were a householder, you were also a brahmachari, practically. It didn't matter. Program was the same. No one got anything. You didn't get, you know, not a paisa did you get when you lived in the temple. You couldn't ask for anything. And You were supplied with the bare necessities of life, and they were very, very bare. So Prabhupada had an entire flat. He had a whole apartment there. And it was very hot, I remember. But even it was so hot and there was air conditioning, Prabhupada didn't like air conditioning at all. And the hot, he didn't mind so much. From India, Prabhupada was accustomed, right? In Bengal and Bombay, Prabhupada liked the warm climate. But when we got there, I had to start and learn everything with Prabhupada. And that's what I saw, how sweet. Prabhupada was so sweet to me, so kind and compassionate and merciful. And he was just very pleasant as he was teaching me different things. And I just remember going on a morning walk. And it was a little cool in the morning there. And I remember one morning on the walk, and Prabhupada had that gray chadar. And you'll see in so many hundreds and thousands of pictures, Prabhupada on a walk with his gray chadar. And, you know, he had to tell me to bring his chadar, so I brought it, and he had it around him on part of the walk. And then the sun came up, and it started to get warm, and he handed me the chadar. And so I grabbed it, and I just kind of, like, just rolled it up. You know, I didn't know what to do with it, and I had the microphone, and so I just kind of rolled it up, and he stopped. Then he grabbed it from me, and he said, like this, and he took it, and he folded it in half, and then he folded it again in half, and then he folded it again. He said, like this, and he handed it back to me. So he taught me how to fold his chadar, you know, first, second day I was with him, and then just continued on with his walk. And then we got back. So now, this was my first day of massage. I had to just massage him. So he would just say a few things. And not only did I have to massage him, but the first day in Dallas, we went into the kitchen. It's like where I'm staying in the guest facilities. It was a small kitchen, but adequate. It had everything in there. It was wok with ghee and nice sink. Everything was there, a little refrigerator. So Prabhupada said, we'll do the massage in the kitchen today. He said, and I'll teach you how to use the cooker. So not only would I have to do the first massage, but now he was showing me how to use his cooker to prepare his lunch, because it all happened at the same time. This was for me. I cooked for Prabhupada everywhere outside of India. As Hari Sari mentioned, he tried cooking a few times, but he didn't do it. So Prabhupada had separate arrangements by that time. But that was my main service, was cooking and massaging Prabhupada. So we went into the kitchen, and I brought the mat to put on the floor, and we're both in gumshas. And Prabhupada starts to show me how to use his cooker, which everyone's familiar with a cooker. When the cooker is like, this was a three-tier cooker. It was rounded on the bottom, and the lid was like a very small wok, kind of with handles, and that was so it was also rounded. And so you had three tiers. The bottom, of course, you would fill with liquid. And he showed me how to make dal in the bottom. And then the two top ones, they had small holes in them. And inside the two top pieces were other containers that you would put in. So he just cut up different sabji, you know, different vegetables, and put them in those, and filled them up with vegetables. And then rice was in the top container that had, you would put the rice in, and you would put enough water in it to steam the rice. So the rice didn't touch any flame at all. It was on the very top part. And then you had a lid over that, and then you jam in some more vegetables between that and the lid of the cooker. And I remember washing the dal, and so he'd give me washing the rice, and I'm pouring it out, you know. Because we were always told you wash the rice three times and then pour off, you know. So I'm doing it, and I did it a second time, and I'm washing, and he says, what are you doing? I said, I'm washing the rice, Prabhupada. He said, you washed it once. He said, that's enough. He said, come on. So this is how he trained me in cooking. It wasn't the same way he trained Jamuna in cooking. He had his, I guess he knew the level of cooking I was prepared to do, and but for whatever reason, he said, that's enough, he said, and So we continued on. And then he said, okay, just keep it on a low flame. So we set it up on the stove, gas stove, and put it on a low flame. We had made the chapati dough and set that aside. And then we sat down, and I right in the kitchen. We're sitting in the kitchen. Now it's hot out, and we're in the kitchen, and the burner's on. It's hot inside there. And that's where I gave Prabhupada his first time I massaged him. And I just started rubbing his head with the sandalwood oil very hard and trying to do what I could remember. Sometimes he would say a little something, you know, he would tell me if I could go harder. One time he grabbed, I was massaging him, I was doing his leg, and I was just doing it, you know, and all of a sudden I felt this hand on my leg and squeezed it. And I jumped. I didn't know what had happened. And here Prabhupada grabbed my leg and he said, like this. And he started. So that's how I learned how to do massage more, because he would give me little clues and say, do like this, you know. And so he would do it to me, you know. And so I started doing. And it was interesting listening to Hari Sari the other day said, the massage was an hour and a half. He said there was a schedule, just like you have here, right? You have a schedule. And you massaged his head for 15 minutes, his back. I didn't have such a schedule. I massaged Prabhupada until he told me to stop. That's how I learned. You would massage, and I would massage his head, and massage his head, and massage his head, and then he would go. Then I stopped. There was no 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And that's why I said sometimes I would massage his back, and I would be rubbing as hard as I could. And Prabhupada would be going over the mail with the secretary, you know, dictating letters. And sometimes he would be speaking with Prajumna, his Sanskrit editor, going over things. And I thought, Prabhupada forgot all about me back here because I'm rubbing and rubbing and as hard as I could, you know. And he's just relaxed and enjoying this massage. So sometimes I would massage a little harder to let him know I was still behind him. I'd be getting tired, and I'm hoping, you know, Prabhupada, you have to tell me to move or I'm just going to fall over, you know. So I didn't have an hour and a half massage. Sometimes it was an hour and a half. Sometimes it was 2 hours. And sometimes it was a little more. Sometimes his back was like 1 hour, just massage his back, and Prabhupada just accepted it, you know, and enjoyed. And sometimes it seemed like he almost just would fall asleep during massage, you know, like, of course, in the evening sometimes he would just. But you did. You just did it until he told you to stop. And once I was with him for over a year, and I've become very expert, I thought. And I started doing this where I would massage him, and I would massage his head. And then I stopped, and then I would massage his back, and I stopped. And I did it for a few days. So the third day, I'm massaging his back, and I massaged for like half an hour his back, and then I stopped. And as soon as my hands left, he said, you massage me until I tell you to stop, not until you tell you to stop. And that, so that was the end of this timed massage. There was, I had no such thing. I was very fortunate. So he showed me how to, after the massage the first day, then we got up and he turned the lid over and he said, so now he said, you make a chaunce, whatever spices were there. That's how I was taught. It was just like Kirtanananda. So there was some cumin, coriander. We always had asafoetida, and that was always there. Turmeric, haldi was there, you know. So just make a little chaunce, and he made one a little big, and with ghee, just like here at this temple. Everything we did with ghee. Oil didn't exist in an ISKCON temple while Prabhupada was present. It only for massage. Mustard oil existed for massage. But there was no oil in any temple in ISKCON. We made ghee, like big, big walkfuls of ghee. We would throw in butter, you know, pounds and pounds, kilos and kilos of butter, and you would make it. We learned how to do it quick method. You could do it really fast if you were stood over it. Or in many temples, they did the over-the-night method, which you would raise it off the flame this high with the different burners and put it on a very low flame. And when you would come down in the morning, you had ghee. And that's what we use for all cooking for Krishna, is ghee. So we had the little ghee and then made a chaunce. And then Prabhupada had me pour some of it into the dal. And then in the second container, we had a wet vegetable. Prabhupada would always have a wet vegetable. And we poured the same chaunce into that, in the wet vegetable. And then there was still some left in this small wok, this lid. So then we would pick out some of the different vegetables, potato, cauliflower, whatever. So then you would put that in there. So with one chaunce, he made three different preparations. This was one of the things Prabhupada was very keen on showing me and would talk about. It was how little time was spent on maintaining the body, you know, on eating and sleeping and everything very quickly. He didn't want that I spent all morning cooking for him. He liked to tell people. In Vrindavan, we were there, it was 1975, big Krishna Balaram Mandir, and he was giving darshan in his room. And he would talk about, in Vrindavan, he talked a lot about austerities and the Goswamis and how little they slept and how little they ate. And he said, this is the process. Devotee's not interested. This the minimum amount in maintaining the body. And he said, just like Shrutakirti, he said, he does my whole lunch. He said, 45 minutes, everything is finished. Rice, dal, chapati, sabji, 45 minutes, a whole lunch. He said, isn't that right, Shrutakirti? I said, yes, Prabhupada. And I said, not only that, I said, but while the 45 minutes the lunch is going on, I said, you're getting massage at that time. He said, yes, 45 minutes, massage and lunch, finished. He said, whole thing, finished. So this is how he showed me. So this was the big trick, was that while you massage Prabhupada, that cooker was just off somewhere in another room. At this time, it was in the same room. But this was always, whenever I massage Prabhupada, I would just think about that cooker bubbling away in the background and worrying if there was enough water in or the dal would burn or it would be undercooked, or because you had to get everything just right. So this was, it was Krishna's mercy. I, you know, 99% of the time there were no problems. It didn't matter whether Prabhupada's massage was 1 hour or 2 hours, somehow or other, everything had to be proper in the cooker. You didn't just went mush for vegetables, huh? You didn't want dal that was completely dissolved. So it was, that was my anxiety during massage. It wasn't the massage, it was what was happening in this cooker. But somehow I think Krishna just always took care of things, so it went all right. So he spent a few days showing me how to use his cooker. He was preparing me for long-term service, I think. And he was very, again, very patient. He didn't get, you know, annoyed or yell or anything. And the one thing they didn't have in the kitchen, they had so much facility in the kitchen, but they didn't have a rolling pin. So the first day, we made the dough, everything, and we come up and there's no rolling pin. And Prabhupada said, that's all right. He said, we don't need a rolling pin. He said, I'll show you how to make chapatis without a rolling pin. I'm thinking, how can you make chapatis without a rolling pin? So then he made the balls. He said, you know, make two balls and flatten them out with flour. Probably some of the Matajis may know how to do this. I don't know. I certainly didn't. And then you just pressed it into a little flour. And then neither did we have chapati flour. We just had whole wheat flour back then. The United States was not very well equipped. Like here you have your atta, you know, you have your chapati, very fine, fine flour. We just had whole wheat flour then, I remember. And you would just press. So we pressed two. And then he just put one on top of the other one and just started pressing with his fingers. And then as it spread out, you would just turn them both over, a little more flour, and press. And he said, actually, he said, this is better than rolling pin. He said, it makes better chapatis. And you know, in the course of a minute, you had two that were ready to cook at once. You had two at once because you just continued pressing a little bit of flour and you would press. So instead of rolling, you just press with your fingers. And they came out very nice, very thin, and they puffed up. You had, chapati had to puff up, or you don't even think about bringing it to Prabhupada, you know. So then, after massage, Prabhupada would then go take his bath. So he always ended his massage, he would have his gumcha, and then he would pour a little mustard oil into his hand, huh? And then he would oil all the gates with his mustard oil. He'd put it in his ears and put it in his nostrils like that. And then he would just walk off. So nice, Prabhupada would walk off and leave his imprints, you know, because he had oil on the bottom of his feet. So he would have imprints everywhere, like here. If you have one set of imprints on the Vyasasan, you're so fortunate. Huh? But imagine rooms were just covered with Prabhupada's footprints, oily footprints everywhere he went. And he would just walk off very sweetly with the gumcha. And he would just drop from under his gumcha, he would just drop his loin, you know, his loincloth there, and he would just walk away. And then he would take his bath, he did all that by himself. His towel is in there. So then while he was bathing, it's the other thing, you would lay out his cloth on his bed. He always had a bed, so he would lay out his kopin, and he put his new dhoti, new kurta. So these are things, no one told me anything, but I just figured, you know, just make everything easy, you know, as easy as you could. Prabhupada, he was my deity. Like Hari Sari now, he does his puja every morning to Prabhupada. But when Prabhupada was here, we had living, imagine, you had a deity that he would tell you when you did something wrong. And so it was so nice. You got to do your pujari work to a living deity. Prabhupada was there. So that's what I did. I would lay out his cloth. He would put it on. I didn't dress him. But even his shirt, I would button the bottom two buttons on his shirt because it still fit around his head. But then he had two more buttons, only two left to button. Huh? And so all this went on while Prabhupada was bathing. You prepared his plate. You laid out his cloth on the bed. And you would go to his desk. Hari Sari was describing the things that were in the white bag. His desk had all his essentials. So while he was bathing, you would go and open up his mirror. He had a nice mirror that opened up. It was silver and had carved ivory on the outside. Gargamuni had got him this beautiful set for applying tilak. So he would open the mirror and put it so he could see himself. And then he had a small lota. It was so cute. It was the size of a golf ball. If you know what a golf was, about this big as lota. And had a small lid that went on the top. And a tiny spoon about this big. So that was filled with water. So you put that and you'd put it and you'd put the spoon right on the top. And then he had his ball of tilak, which he just kept on a small silver, but very small plate. And he always rolled, work that so that it became a ball as well, a nice size ball. And so you set everything up so he could apply his tilak, because after his massage and bath, then he would dress, then he would go sit down behind his desk and he would apply tilak all over all the spots on his body before lunch, and then he would say his noon gayatri. So you had to get all that. So then while he was getting dressed and saying gayatri, putting tilak, now you're rolling his chapatis for him because they had to be fresh. So when you, by the time he was done, you wanted to have his plate ready, which generally had rice, dal, a chapati, just one chapati, and it might be three different vegetables, a wet vegetable and two others. And sometimes when it was available, I would just cut up some bitter melon he liked very much. And you would just fry that in a small wok with a lot of turmeric and salt and make them cripsy, you know. And so he would start the meal with the bitter melon. So he said that increased appetite. So then he would be sitting behind his desk waiting, and you would come in, and I would come in and bring in the plate and put it. He always had a little chokhi that he would put against the wall. Like he didn't, when he sat, Prabhupada faced the wall when he ate prasadam. There wasn't any outside. He didn't sit against the wall and look out, but he would face the wall. So the table was right against the wall, and he just sat, not on a cushion, just on straw mat. That was it. And he would just sit there, and then you would, as soon as you brought in the plate, he would get up and sit down. And then immediately he would start with his chapatis, right? He ate chapatis first with his vegetables like that. So then I would go in and put the plate down and offer obeisances and then run right back to the kitchen, because then you would have to roll another chapati and you'd cook it and it would puff up, and then you would put it on a plate and you would run back into Prabhupada's room. And he would be eating, and he would be all ready for the next chapati, and he'd slide it on. And then you would offer obeisances, and you would run back out of the room, and you'd make another chapati. And then you'd get that chapati, and if that didn't puff up, you had to make another chapati that did. And then you would run back into the room, slide it on his plate, and offer obeisances. And you did that until he said, okay. So sometimes it was three chapatis, sometimes four, sometimes six. And the more you did it, the more ecstatic you became, the more chapatis you would bring, because Prabhupada was eating, you know. The more he ate, then we said Prabhupada was feeling very healthy, had good appetite. So all the devotees would be happy to know that Prabhupada ate. So I'd say, Prabhupada ate six chapatis today. And we'd be all happy that Prabhupada ate so many chapatis. And each time you get to go in and offer your obeisances and then put it and then run out. And then he'd say, all right. Then after his chapatis, then he would put his rice down. Then he would put some dal in, start mixing up things, you know, little sabji, little dal, and he would sit there. But it's just always quiet. And Prabhupada honored prasadam. You know, you could really understand this Krishna prasadam. And Prabhupada was just had such a wonderful mood when he was taking it. And everything, the way he ate, I don't know, Yadubar, do we have any footage of Prabhupada taking prasadam? Such nice. In Australia, he said. It's such a nice experience to see how Prabhupada honored prasadam. You know, it was Krishna. And always quiet. Sometimes he would go out on a program, you know, a life member's house or something. That was a different affair. But otherwise, there was no one there. And if someone came in, or if someone was in the room when I brought in the plate, he always had first-class method. He would just take something off his plate, piece of fruit or a little sweet, and he would hand it. There were two people, three people, five people. He would hand them all and say, okay, now you can go. That was it. Everything ended. There was no question of meetings while he ate. No such thing. I mean, 2 years, never. When he took prasadam, everything stops. No nonsense talking. Should never be nonsense talking, but especially while taking prasadam. So these are the things that I gradually learned day after day in being with Prabhupada. So now it was the second day, and I saw Prabhupada the first day after he took lunch prasadam. Then after he sat for a little bit, and then he went into the bedroom and he laid down. Sometimes he would take a nap, 20 minutes, sometimes half an hour, sometimes a little more. And I didn't think anything about it. I just thought, it's Prabhupada, you know. He went to bed late at night. He got up very early in the morning. So sometimes he would take a nap after lunch. But the second day I was with him, after lunch, after his nap, I hear the bell ring. I walked into his room and offered obeisances, and he just looked at me again. He said, Shruta Kirti. And I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, your name is too long. I said, oh, okay. He said, from now on, I'm going to call you Shruto. I said, okay, Prabhupada. And he just smiled. And then he looked at me and he said, He said, "Do you take a nap after lunch?" And I said, "Oh no, Prabhupada." Because we didn't take naps. And at the time, of course, later on I did. But at the time it was, you slept 4 to 5 hours at night. You were very happy to get that much sleep back then, and especially in New Vrindavan. So I said, "No, Prabhupada." He said, "Because I'm an old man." He said, "So, because when you're old," he said, "sometimes it's difficult to sleep a long time at any one time." He said, "If you can't sleep so long at night." He said, "So sometimes," he said, "I take a nap during the daytime." And I just said, "Okay." And I'm thinking, why is he saying this? Like, he was explaining to me that he was taking a nap, like I needed to know. And I said, "Whatever you do is fine, Prabhupada, it's okay." But it was so sweet that he wanted to tell me these things. And I was thinking, one thing, I thought Prabhupada wasn't an old man. Prabhupada was just like a young boy. The more I was with him, the more I felt like he was like this young, very young boy. But it was so sweet. And again, everything he said, it just increased your attachment to him. And of course, this is the duty. You know, this is his duty, and this was his method. We become more and more attached to him. And the more attached you became to him, the more attached you became to Krishna, the more attached you become to devotional service. In so many ways, everything he did, you just loved him more. And this is what a devotee does. A devotee just increases your desire to become a devotee yourself. This is when you see advanced devotees, they have this ability that you just love them. So Prabhupada never called me Shruto again, even though he said my name was too long. Never again. And of course my name wasn't that long. You see in the movement, some devotees have such long names. But again, it was just an affectionate little thing. And even Shruto, they say in Bengali, I think, how to use this name, Shruto. So he gave me this name after a few days. So the experience in Dallas was very nice, very sweet. And again, Prabhupada was just taking his time with me and allowing me to learn what I needed to do. And he showed me everything, again, with such patience. I never felt like I was a disturbance to him, which was very nice. Like he was annoyed by what I didn't know, which was so much. What I knew was so little. What I didn't know was so much. But he just took his time and went on from there. It's almost 9:30 already, so we managed to get to one city today, Dallas. Tomorrow we'll move to San Francisco. But if anyone has any questions or comments, anything to add, we have a few minutes left. Nothing? Take a microphone.
Just you want to hear a summary of Prabhupada's schedule from the whole day till night, 124 hours, what he did, like?
The 24-hour day, his schedule? yeah, we could kind of do that. He, again, Prabhupada, if we start with the morning, he would rise somewhere around 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. And this, of course, was when he did his translating work. This is a very nice time of the day. And that's what I said, that's a whole other series. But just to give the schedule, he would get up, hard to say, but around 2 o'clock, sometimes 1 o'clock. So he would have maybe anywhere from 2 to 4 hours. Generally, say around 3 hours, he would rest. And like he said, he didn't sleep much at night. So that was because he went to bed somewhere around 10 o'clock, got his massage in bed. So we'll start there. He would do translating off and on, and sometimes you would hear him translating, and then he would just stop and just sit there. He would lie back there. And when he translated, of course, we'll talk about that as well. So many books, Bhagavatam, and commentaries by Vishwanath Chakravarti, Sridhar Swami. And of course, then around 5 o'clock or so, he would get ready for the morning. So it was one of the things, you had to have datun, you know, his twig. Prabhupada brushed his teeth with datun. He didn't use a toothbrush. Later on, towards the end, I think he might have used toothbrush some, but he just used the twig, you know. So you had to get, this was one of the things when you traveled in the West, you had to find a suitable twig. There weren't neem trees or mango trees around, you know, in Dallas, Texas, and in New York City. Imagine finding a datun in New York City. You didn't go to the store and say, I need a pack of datun, you know. So you'd be climbing trees, you know, you would get devotees to do all these services. So then he would brush and he would wash up in the morning and then he would go sit down. And then his morning, he would ply his tilak. Same thing, you would have to get everything ready. And in the morning, he took his Ayurvedic medicine. He took Jagendra Ras every other morning. And you would prepare that. I would prepare that with mortar and pestle. It had little black cardamom, they called it. One black cardamom, the seeds from one black cardamom. One pill of Jagendra Ras, which had, it was like a tonic, and it had a little gold, ground gold, and also pearl was in it. It was expensive. And a little dab of honey, and you just mix it all up and put it on the desk. So Prabhupada would come in the morning, and the morning he took it, he would get the mortar and pestle, I don't know which is which, but then he would take the, and get it and, you know, put it in his mouth. And then when he was done, again, it was very expensive ingredients, he would get his tongue and just lick the mortar, you know, and get everything out of there. So then he would put that there. And then applied tilak, and then he would say Gayatri, and then it was morning walk. So that was always right around sunrise. So complete with the drive and all, morning walk was about 2 hours, because he would walk for over an hour, hour and a half a day. Then he would come back. So the temple program was always adjusted to when exactly when Prabhupada came back. That's when the doors opened. That was the one time the deity curtains opened, sometimes at different times, because Prabhupada didn't always come back at an exact time. So that was the one time when Prabhupada allowed. So then they would greet the deities when Prabhupada came back. And then he would sit in Vyasasan and had Guru Puja. And then he would give class, and then he would have kirtan. So now it's around 9 o'clock in the morning, and then he would take his breakfast. And his breakfast was prepared in the kitchen by the Mataji's, the servant had to be right there. Prabhupada, like everyone as an entourage, had to be there for class, want everyone to hear. And then after breakfast, he would read, and just have some quiet time for himself. And about an hour later, the devotees from the temple would come in and they would have some different meetings and things and some darshan. So this would go on till around 11:30 and then began massage. So massage and bath and again tilak and all that took till around 1:30. So Prabhupada took lunch around 1:30 or so. So then after lunch, now it's 2 o'clock, and Prabhupada would sit and sometimes take a little nap. So now it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So the afternoon, you know, it really depended on where he was as far as if there was darshan. But usually between 3 and 5, again, Prabhupada had his own time. And he would read. So Prabhupada would read his books. You know, and there were not a lot of books. There were like 4 books, 5 books. And sometimes Prabhupada would read. And sometimes he would just go over to the harmonium and he would just start playing harmonium and chanting. And whenever I heard Prabhupada play the harmonium, I would run into the room. And then he would just... So then I would grab kartels. So it wasn't any recording. It was nothing. It was just Prabhupada chanting and he would grab the kartels and he would just chant. You know? So he did, just as he prescribed everyone to do, he was doing the same thing. And it's so much what I loved about Prabhupada was not seeing him and dealing with his disciples and having to train us and having to discipline us and chastise us and manage all the different temples all over the world. These were all his duty. This was his duty as spiritual master and his duty to his spiritual master. But when all these things went on, imagine there were temples all over the world, and Prabhupada still, he had time to just, he would do his bhajan. Like he was just in Vrindavan and he never left. And when everything else was gone, then you would, you know, to me, this was Prabhupada. He was just a pure devotee of Krishna, you know, and just completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And he was attached, very attached to these things, reading pastimes about Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, chanting Vaishnava songs. He didn't do it to make some show. He was alone. He was in his room. He did it because it's what he loved. It's what he loved to do because he was always, Krishna was there. He was always seeing Krishna. And Krishna was in his heart. And he enjoyed. So this was the mood that was so nice. And then he would allow others to come in then in the afternoon and you would have darshan. And sometimes he would speak philosophy. Or again, he would train how to preach, you know, how to increase the Krishna consciousness movement. These were things he was also very excited to do, very eager to do. Preaching, Prabhupada loved to preach. And so then this would go on into the evening, and then he would take a little prasadam. Always had hot milk. If you could touch the cup, then it wasn't hot enough. It had to be hot, super hot milk with a little honey in it or a little sugar. If there was no honey, little sugar, didn't matter. And sometimes he would eat in the evening. Sometimes around 8 o'clock, 8:30, he'd call me in and ask for puris and sabji. He'd say, like, make potato eggplant sabji and puris. And so we would have that with hot milk around 8 o'clock at night, you know. And then after prasadam, he would sit. And about an hour later, so it was usually around 10, then you give him evening massage, which that would, again, as long as he wanted it, you were massaging him. And that could be difficult in the sense that you were also tired. I would be tired. So because Prabhupada's lying in bed, and you're sitting in bed with him, or you're sitting on the floor, and sometimes he would just lean and just go back and forth and back and forth and rub his feet. And then sometimes Prabhupada would close his eyes, and but you just kept massaging. And then finally we'd just say, like he said, we'd just go, Or he'd say, okay. Or if you were looking, he'd just nod his head. So then you just offered obeisances and then went to bed. And that was a day in a nutshell. That was a day. Microphone?
I was wondering whether you could reveal when you took rest, how you took rest, and also if Prabhupada used to take any breakfast.
Reveal how?
Because it must be difficult for a servant to rest. So how did you fit it in? What was your secret? And also whether Prabhupada actually ate in the morning.
Yeah, I mentioned Prabhupada ate what he ate in the morning.
If he took breakfast.
Yeah, he always ate breakfast after class. And just have whatever fruits were available. That was the main portion, were fruits. Sometimes the colder it was, the more Prabhupada would eat. So sometimes it was in a place and it was very cool. Prabhupada might even ask for some halava. He never liked this porridge. Prabhupada wasn't into porridges and things. Maybe a little upma or a little halava. And then he would just take some of that with his fruit. And again, depending on the climate, he would have hot milk or curd, dahi. And always had his milk sweets. Sandesh, I mentioned I had learned. Prabhupada said I made very expert sandesh. And that was one of his favorite sweets he would take at the end of his meal. Always had sandesh or rasgulla. And if you were in a temple where they had nice milk sweets like New Dwarka, Los Angeles, you would put, you know, deity maha on his plate, like some burfi. Prabhupada, these are the sweets Prabhupada liked. Didn't care for concocted sweets. In the West, we were very good at concocting sweets. We'll talk about that sometime. As far as me, Taking rest, is that what you asked? Yeah?
Because I'm a good friend with personal servants of my spiritual master, Srila Shivaram Swami, and they are just on their feet from morning till evening. So when Prabhupada got up at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, what was your schedule? That's what I'm asking.
He very rarely called me in before, from the time he took rest, he would very rarely call me in until, you know, 5 in the morning after Mangal Arati. If he did, it was because there was like an emergency. If something happened at 1 o'clock or if something wasn't working properly with the dictaphone machine, then he would ring his bell. And I always heard it. I was be next to Prabhupada's room. And many times I would wake up hearing him translate. And I would also just go back to sleep. I didn't stay awake. But sometimes I would wake up hearing his voice as he was translating Srimad Bhagavatam. But he never wanted to disturb when we were sleeping. And in fact, at different times in Vrindavan at Krishna Balaram, his quarters weren't complete. So the servant quarters were in between where he sat, his sitting room, and the bathroom were the servant's quarters. So when he would get up at 1, 2 in the morning, he would go use the bathroom. So we had to walk through the servant's quarters. And whenever he did it, I would hear him. And he would just walk through and he would just kind of shuffle, you know, his feet. I could hear his feet. Then I would be just sleeping on the mat on the floor. So I would just roll over because I was already lying down. So I would just roll over and then the Mahom Vishnu Badaya, and he'd always go, no, 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 no. He'd go back to sleep, go back to sleep. And he would get annoyed or bothered that I was waking, you know, that he was waking me up and that I was offering obeisances. So then he would go into the bathroom, and then 2 minutes later he would come back out, and I'd hear him, and again, and so we did this all the time. And he would say, "No, no, no, go to sleep," he'd say, and I just continue, and then he would walk in back to the room. There were a few times where he called me, but that was very rare. He liked that you got your required sleep. But I think we have to stop here. It's getting late. Yeah, it's almost 20 before 10. So we'll continue tomorrow morning. We'll see everyone then. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Shruta Kirta Prabhu ki jai.